Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up everybody and burn down the system, pay up the exit polls. Wake up the silence, return the fear. I feel the love in the silence club. I can feel the space between us. Little Captain and the common man. Time to show them all.
Welcome to the Star Chamber, episode number 61. That actually sounds kind of impressive now. We got a little bit of a track record going on. And I'm here with my awesome, awesome co-host who, you know, no pun intended, is to the west of me right now, Michael West. So,
yay.
Yeah.
How's everybody doing?
I'm doing okay. And we'll have to wait to hear from our guest who's on hold right now. But he's a good one. And if I sound brain dead tonight, it's just from the sheer volume of activity lately. So I apologize in advance, but it's been busy, yeah, to say the least. I mean, good stuff. I mean, we've had a slew of blog tours going on. Me personally, I had the new book Hellscapes Volume 2. Come out just because I do that project,
which
just
is,
so I show Michael that I'm not just a fantasy guy. I can write horror.
If you haven't read, if you like Clive Barker and the really dark, fantastical type of horror, these books are right up your alley.
Well, thank you, man. I'm very flattered because you're a true horror master. So yeah, I appreciate that. But yeah, it's definitely fun, and I love the horror genre, and I think it offers a whole lot that you can't necessarily do in other genres. So, for me as a writer, I mean, it definitely expands my horizons, and like I said, I think the horror genre is very underappreciated as far as a literary genre. So, and it's something that I talked about extensively on the blog tour, but, it's definitely something I think, deserves a lot more respect as far as, in the various, writing circles and literary circles and things like that. I think it too often, gets overlooked, but, because for me, I mean, definitely I see, the intrinsic values of it whenever I go into it, but it's definitely something I love. But how's things going with you? Tonight we're kind of checking in online here. So
yeah, it's been busy. Just still going full steam on the new Legacy of the Gods novel, which is inching ever closer to to being finished. But I keep complaining to other writers that I know that I'm very slow, and they point out how long it takes for George R. R. Martin to bring out a book.
Yes, so, you're a lot quicker than that.
yeah, I'm Speedy Gonzalez next to that. So
no kidding.
Doing that, and then doing a short story for an upcoming anthology that I'm a little excited about. So
very cool.
Lots and lots of cool stuff going on. And, of course, had to get through through Halloween, and now we're almost to Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I know. It's moved. Yeah, November is just like blown by so far for me. So.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, it's just moving light speed.
But I now have a Predator Christmas ornament to go with my Alien Christmas ornament.
Sweet. Well, hey, you got the counterparts now.
Yeah, and then I have a weeping angel from Doctor Who for the tree topper. So I'm excited.
Oh my God, I want to see this. Yeah, you better post some pics on that for sure.
I'll post pics.
Yeah, because you do fun stuff. I mean, that's. I wish I did more fun stuff like you. I mean, but your house. I mean, I bet you could charge like admission to your house just to see the cool stuff that you have, because you always bring out cool stuff to various conventions that you're getting signed or this or that, you know. And I just know it's, you know, you could probably charge admission.
Well, that's the when I get my office. That's the other thing I've been doing off and on this year is doing, you know, the home remodeling. And hopefully, because right now most of my collection of posters and stills and whatnot is mothballed while I'm revamping the office. So my hope is that, you know, come the spring, we get the new book and I have my new office finally finished, and there will be a huge unveiling ceremony for the new office, I'm sure, that I'll post pics and stuff. But
I didn't want to interrupt you. That was so bad. I saw what you did there, revamping Mr. Vampires Don't Sparkle. I saw what you did there. I'm not that slow. That's awesome, man. But I know you've been I'm really looking forward to your next book in Legacy of the Gods for sure. But in the meantime, yeah, congratulations, because I know that you've got another BookBub approval coming up for a big Cinema of Shadows offer.
Yeah.
So those are so hard to get nowadays.
Everybody out there who, if you haven't yet picked up my novel Spook House on ebook format for 99 cents, this is your, you've got now a week and a half to do that, because come the end of November, it will no longer be 99 cents. So this is if you've been, you know, kind of saying, well, it's still 99 cents, I'll just wait. Don't wait anymore. time to download it, because come 1st of December, it won't be 99 cents anymore.
Well,
but the good
news
is that Cinema Shadows will be.
Yeah. And like I said, it's harder than ever, and we see this, you know, on the press level, but it's harder than ever to get a BookBub a promotion these days. I mean, I know, you know, people have gotten a slew of them in the past, and you know, they've said the same thing. It's getting hard. It's so hard to get one nowadays, and so congratulations, because that's definitely like acknowledgement of your work, and it's definitely an achievement nowadays to actually get approved, you know, for one of those. So that's gonna be awesome, and hopefully expose quite a few more people to your work.
Yeah, I'm really you know, this year I've been kind of interesting year for me, because I haven't really had anything new out, but by the same token, I've had so many new readers who have discovered me and started, you know, letting me know that they have started reading me and are enjoying my stuff. So it's been a really, really interesting year in that I haven't really had anything new, but yet a lot of people are coming around and kind of discovering what I do have out there. So
right.
I think the future is going to be pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's so bright, you better get your sunglasses. Well, shades, I should say, paraphrase the 80s song, but whatever. But tonight it's fun, because we have actually, you and I have both been troll pubbing with this fellow. And troll pubbing, of course, is the famous troll pub in Louisville, and we have actually been there, and that's probably where, you know, in some subliminal way, we got the idea to bring him on the show. But he is like a god. I guess he is like a god. I mean, he can do so much. But good God, I mean, he does so, he's so multifaceted. I mean, not only does he do a great Brandon Lee Crow appearance, but that's just the tip of the iceberg with his talents. I mean, he's an author. I mean, he's a comic book guy. I mean, he's in broadcast. I mean, he's an artist, and I mean, let me tell you, he is good as it gets in all of these areas. And like I said, he's very quiet and sneaky, and about his multi talents. He waits to he's waited like a long time. I've known him, and he's waited to reveal them to me over a long time. And so I was like, man, we need to get you on the show, and the timing is great because he just had some a new release in his Darkness Unbound series. His new release is Terror of Night, and so you know, without further ado, we want to bring him on the show. He is the one, the only, Glenn Porzig. And Glenn, you are now live on the Star Chamber show.
Yay!
There he is. Is that him? Do we have you, Glenn?
Glenn?
Or is he over here?
Am I over here?
Because I see
unmuted.
Him twice in the back.
Glenn?
Glenn?
I heard
it.
Unmuted. Hello. Hello.
We have you on the dashboard twice. I don't know how you logged in twice, but it's pretty
That's
impressive.
That's weird. Yeah, I can do lots of miracles like that. Yeah. I'm one of those lowercase g gods.
You were so talented you need two logins.
That's how he achieves so much, is he's cloned himself.
I think so. I mean, the guy hangs out of helicopters and does artwork. I mean, he's just like, God, he covers the full range. I mean, how you doing tonight, Glenn? What's going on, man?
Having a good time. Fun listening to you guys chat, getting caught up at the top of the show there. That's cool.
Yeah, you got the B team, you know, because, of course, Sayla and Alex, you know, they're the A team, so you got stuck with the B team tonight.
I'm very comfortable with the company. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, we've harassed you a lot already. We've even been troll pubbing together, so that's a phrase coined by the great L. Andrew Cooper, just to give him credit. But
what happens in the troll pub stays in the troll pub.
Yes.
Until it makes it to the podcast.
Yeah, until it makes it to the podcast.
Oh, my God. But so how is the new book doing? Because it just came out. Give us a little bit of lowdown on the brand new release.
Well, yeah, it's keeping me hopping. I'm realizing, you know, I got to keep out there and keep it in the people's consciousness so it doesn't fade into obscurity, you know what I'm saying? So I'm busy making promo graphics and working on things and, you know, coming up, rehashing all my promotional material and things I'd gone through with the last book and kind of refreshing it and seeing what's changed since then and, you know, just really keeping me busy. And, of course, we had this show tonight, and then I'm getting ready. If people are listening live this Saturday, I'll be at Cavalcade of Comics, which is at cavalcadeofcomics.com. It's in Louisville, and I'm getting ready for that show. That'll be the first time that I'll actually have my book, Terror of Night, in print with me, you know, available. So that'll be really cool. Looking forward to seeing how that goes. So,
impressed by is like I said, it's just like I always liked it when you see great cover continuity between books and a series, and I think anybody that sees your covers can see that there is great continuity in the two books that are currently out in the series. You are an artist, so talk a little bit about maybe the cover art approach, since you mentioned graphics and the new book.
Well, thank you very much. I put a lot of time and effort and thought into the covers, and I did go back and tweak the first one a little bit more after I had made the second one, because I really wanted them to be as obviously a series as possible. There's lots of thematic things, I've got multi-layers. Some of the neat little behind-the-scenes bits about this is the background of my cover is actually a stormy sky photo that I took, and I turned it red, and it looks like the fire from the pits of hell or something in the background, but it's actually a stormy sky. So that's kind of neat that I was able to bring my photography into the graphic design of the cover, but kind of repurpose it. And then
well,
I've got
so
a...
talented. I figured you were so talented that I figured you actually got photography done in the pits of hell. You know, I mean,
I tried working on that, but it's hard to fit in my schedule. I'm just so busy. It's a long trip, you know?
Right. Yeah, and the helicopter has a little trouble navigating those kind of heat temperatures.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's more for going up than down, you know? Hopefully. Another thing I did.
The covers really fit well together. They just really do. I mean,
thank you. Thank you. Another thing I did is it just as a graphical element, sort of like at a 50%, I've got a it's actually the exorcism prayer in Latin, but I've got it reduced down to where it's more of a graphical element in the background. If you look carefully, you'll see what it is. And, you know, most people aren't going to recognize the exorcism prayer in Latin. But if they do, then there's a nice little clue of what's going on in the book there in the graphics of the cover. The other thing was I had started out as an artist before I got into writing, and at one time I thought about trying to paint a cover, you know, entirely paint it, but then I was like, I'm pretty hard on myself when it comes to my art, and I didn't really want to have to come up with something I would be totally happy with, you know, on the cover, in addition to having done the inside as well. It was enough to put the book out there and, you know, see what kind of feedback I was going to get, let alone to do the cover as well. And I knew that photo covers were kind of popular, and I spent a lot of time in Photoshop. I love doing photo manipulation and stuff. So it was natural to, like on the first cover, I've got a nun, and I went in and just did something subtle. I painted out her pupil and iris, and she's just got a pure white eye. And I think it's just enough to make it creepy, you know, tell you there's something going on here, you know, but without getting too over the top, you know, because
well,
I wanted that
Catholic
creep
back. Well, the Catholic school boy that went to Catholic school from grade school all the way through high school, I must say, the nun that you have is far sexier than any nun that I've ever had.
There is that. There is that. She does have a little bit of makeup on there, and my cousin refers to her as my stripper nun because of the makeup she's got on. But the character of the book is a young, attractive girl who's a nun, you know. So, you know, so there's that. And then
well,
for the
I,
sequel...
I wish I had one of those in high school and grade school.
Yeah.
Darn.
I actually, second through eighth grade, attended Catholic school myself. So,
nice.
So you
yeah. share my pain.
And,
all right.
And those nuns were nothing like this either. And a neat little anecdote for the cover, I wanted to do the same thing for the second book, where I've got like half the face of the character and have a close-up of the eye, and I've got a character in a gas mask, which there is a character in the book like that. You know, both images are, you know, from the book. And that's the nice thing. It's not like when you're with a publisher who may or may not have the artist read the book and do something appropriate. You know, back in the old days when all sorts of weird covers would come out that had nothing to do with the books. By doing my own covers, I get exactly what I want. And for this one, you know, I've got the gas mask and the lens is shattered. And you can see the eye beneath it. But I really put a grungy, kind of a modern horror poster look kind of texture to the face and the eye. And the eye's all bloodshot, and it's really gross and creepy, and I was really happy with the way that turned out. But a neat little behind-the-scenes thing, I used a stock photo for the gas mask, but that didn't have an eye. There was no eye seen in the photo. I happened to have had, at one point, a really bad busted vessel in my eye, and I had taken a picture of it, and I went and found that picture and really super tweaked it out, and that is actually my eye on the cover of the book.
Nice.
So I made a sneak appearance.
Well done.
So when you see that really disgusting looking eye, you'll know that's mine. Yeah, so that's kind of weird.
Well, the fans want to know that, you know, if book three, will your cover image have a character with a pupil in it?
No, no pupils in this series. Sorry.
That is a cool anecdote, though. That is awesome. Of course, I never would have guessed that. Yeah.
It's awesome. Kind of a neat thing. And another thing that was, I think, a cool graphic element in the first book was I took up a pentagram and use that as kind of like a halo, kind of like a saint's halo behind the nun's head. So that's a really creepy, evil touch to it, you know. Maybe a little sacrilegious. Don't mean to be.
And your pentagram actually has 5 points. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just
hence
the
name.
I'm just throwing all the crap I get for having a 7-pointed star that gets referred to as a pentagram.
Oh, right.
Because people can't count in Latin.
Yeah, right. Well, he's got the exorcism right in Latin on there. I'm sure every Catholic priest that's a reader of his is like, whoa, he knows the stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, it's kind of funny. I recently had the audiobook recorded. I don't have it available yet, hopefully soon. It still needs to be post-processed and everything. But we had the audiobook, and I have an actress that is a friend of mine who read the book, and she went and found a friend of hers that worked with the church who got her some audio tapes of a Latin mass to listen to help her with her pronunciation when it got to the part where she needed to speak the Latin in the book. So it's not like she learned Latin necessarily, but, you know, it's nice to take the extra effort to add some authenticity to it.
So does listening to the audio book then conjure up actual demons, or...
Yeah, it's just like the tape in Evil Dead when they play the Necronomicon back. Yeah, exactly.
Am I going to need to, like, start putting people in my basement, or...?
Yeah, it's like the e-book. I mean, it's the audiobook version of the Necronomicon. Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Okay.
But the
just
neat thing...
Just in time for Christmas.
Exactly. I was really thrilled. I really can't wait to get the audiobook out. I worked with Brink Stevens. Scream Queen Brink Stevens did my audio.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, she's done so many movies.
She's amazing.
Yeah. She's really talented, super intelligent, and just the nicest person. One of the most interesting people I've ever met, and I've met a lot of interesting people. So, she was just wonderful to work with her, and I can't wait to get it out there, get some fans' reactions, you know, because she just knocked it out of the park. Bad Girls from Mars and lots of other crazy Sorority Babes and the Slime Ball Ballerama.
that's my favorite. Her and
Linnea or
yeah, Linnea. Thank you. I had some some brain loss there for a second. Linnea Quigley. You know, and you get, yeah, I tell you what, if you get out of the con and get, if you go to a convention where the two of them are there, you will have a ball. When the two of them get together, it is just so much fun.
I've only had the opportunity to meet Linnea once, and she was really nice, but I've known Brink for years. I've seen her at so many shows, and we keep in touch, and it was just great working with her during that time when we were, you know, couldn't wait to get the new files every day, you know, just to hear what she'd done with it. I really think it's some of her very best work. I mean, it's pretty amazing. I was like, wow, you wouldn't have known I wrote it. It turned out so good.
Well, I was excited about it before, but now I'm very excited about it. So that's awesome.
All right.
The excitement is building here, right, on episode 61. That's awesome. Oh, man.
Well,
you mentioned... go ahead, Mike.
I was just going to say, as someone who watches Ancient Aliens religiously. And does a lot of research for my Legacy of the Gods novels that have a lot of dealings with extraterrestrials and ancient astronaut theories and whatnot. Your Sci-Fi Channel documentaries that you did, can you go into those a little bit?
Yeah, that was a wonderful opportunity to be able to work with Sci-Fi Channel and to go to Roswell. I got to go to Roswell and then to Keksberg. And I really felt at the time that I was like a Roswell expert. I read about it so much. So to go there was just really amazing. I wasn't as familiar with Keksberg, back when they were Sci-Fi Channel, spelled SCIFI instead of
right,
SCIFI,
the right way.
They did lots of original programming, and I'm proud to have worked on two of the highest-rated original programs that they had ever made, at least up to that point. I haven't kept up with it since then, but we flew out to Roswell, and they were doing an archaeological dig to look for forensic evidence, that may have been overlooked, figuring that the story is all the soldiers were down on their hands and knees sweeping the area for debris to clear up the area so nobody could find anything. But they figured, hey, back then, maybe they missed something. Maybe there's something out there. And the first one's called The Roswell Crash, Startling New Evidence. And they used to air it all the time. It was available on DVD. I don't know if you could still find it. I've got a copy, of course. And then there's the new Roswell, Keksberg Exposed. And that one I don't think has been released on DVD yet. However, I did hear recently that they may be re-releasing both of them on DVD. So I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
They may show up on Sci-Fi again here and there.
I remember watching them when they first aired.
Well, then you saw at least the back of my head. I know there's a couple of scenes where I'm actually in it, in the first one, the Roswell crash. But it was a lot of fun hanging out with, some of the execs from Sci-Fi came out because they were into that sort of thing, and so it's like, hey, we're making a documentary about this. I'm gonna go check it out myself, So it was neat to meet them and hang out with them, and to go to the UFO museum and a lot of the sites from out there, and to walk around, where they think the UFO crashed. And to spoil the ending, in case, people can't see it or haven't seen it or don't remember, they did actually find something that could not be identified.
Very cool.
Some little bit of something. It wasn't, like, super impressive. It's not like they found some cosmic gizmo or something, but they found some little bit of something that, they took it to all these big labs and everything, and they couldn't figure out what it was. So it may have been extraterrestrial. So there's the. So at least after all that digging in the sand, we did finally find something to make it worth our while.
So, very cool.
That was quite an experience. And a lot of the people that worked on that got together, and they kept journals while they were there, and they got together and released a book about the experience as well.
Oh, wow.
Now, at the time, I didn't consider myself a writer, and I didn't invite myself into that project, so I'm not in that, but I've always regretted it. I've always like, man, I could have been in that book. That'd been cool. Early on, I wanted to be a comic book artist when I was a kid. It was like, oh, I'm going to draw a comic book someday. This is awesome. I used to sit around and make up my own comic characters and everything. And of course, I, read about UFOs and stuff and watched all the unsolved mysteries and all that stuff. And,
right.
I
remember watching the In Search Of shows with Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, In Search Of, yeah. I think it was from the Unsolved Mysteries episode. The craft that was seen in Kecksburg, everyone refers to it as the Acorn because it was kind of a reddish brown and shaped like an acorn. And for, I believe it was an episode of Unsolved Mysteries, they made a life-size prop of this thing. And when they were done with the episode, they left. And so some local firefighters went down and got this thing and took it and put it up on some poles, and it's out, I think it's out in front of the firehouse or something. I mean, it's like downtown, a big attraction. People come by. I've got pictures of myself standing underneath the acorn craft, you know. So so it's kind of cool.
Very cool.
But, yeah, if you haven't, if you're not familiar with Kecksburg, it's worth looking into it. Very, very interesting. Good stuff. You know, I learned a lot, and it was neat to talk to the people, interview the witnesses and things, and very, very interesting. A lot of people saw the craft coming in, and or they thought it might have been a meteor or something, but it changed course and it slowed down, and then it was everybody was talking about it on the radio, and people went to try to find it and stuff, and then supposedly military truck came in. And the military closed off all the exits to the town. They went in with an empty truck, came out with something on the back of the truck, and then told everybody that there was nothing there and that they were to say that they had never seen anything. So basically the gist of it. So interesting. Now you're
yeah.
writing about ancient aliens and God and stuff. Are you a fan of Zachariah Sitchin? Have you read any of Sitchin's work?
A little bit, yes.
Yeah. I read a lot of Sitchin. I found it very interesting. Kind of a little bit like reading a textbook or something, not a fun read necessarily, but
right.
Still very, very interesting. So.
Yeah, I did you read Colonel Philip Corso's Day After Roswell?
I have that, and I've always meant to read it, and I haven't gotten around to it. I've had it forever, and I just haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah, that's another one where the style's not great, but there's a lot of good, you know, information in there.
Mm-hmm.
But and then of course, I always love, you know, how, you know, every Friday as I'm writing, I always switch it over to History Channel for. They usually have an Ancient Aliens marathon on.
Yeah.
What gets me about the whole, you know, the Ancient Aliens things is that, you know, sometimes you're sitting there and you're like going, huh, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And then they just take the train to Crazy Town.
right.
And you're like, oh, okay.
You know, a couple of years ago, Giorgio actually came to, I believe it was Wonderfest, of all things, in Louisville.
Oh,
I got to meet him.
Yeah.
And I got like the first two or three seasons of my DVDs signed and stuff. So that was pretty cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice guy. Quite a character.
Is his hair really like that?
It was. I was so tempted to ask him how that ever came about, but I didn't want to. I didn't. I was trying to keep things civil, but. Yeah. So, but yeah, I love. I love everything. You know, that's my problem. You said I do a lot of things. That's because I love a lot of things. I mean, I love art. I love literature. I love movies and. Videos and video games, you know, art, everything. I mean, I love everything. I'm a fan of horror and fantasy and science fiction. I love researching UFO stuff. I mean, anything cool, and I'm all over it. It's hard for me to nail something down. So that's why it's hard for me to focus on a project, because I've got so many others I want to do, because I'm into so many genres.
Yeah, well, that usually happens to me, too, is that I'll be working on a project that, you know, is due. And
yeah. And
I'm working on it, and then I keep getting these ideas for all these other projects that, you know, I'm like, wait your turn.
Yeah.
But I have notebooks full of of stuff that, you know, maybe one day I'll make it into something.
Well, let's go back to your roots. Speaking of multiple areas and projects, I'd like you to talk, because I personally, at Fright Night recently in Louisville, was really impressed with your artwork, and you know, I'm very curious about your comic book background and your heroine Ace of Diamonds and your comic book art style art, and yeah, go back to your roots a little bit and tell us a little bit about that side of you.
Well, going way back, I think it all started, you know, I watched, as a kid, I watched the 66 Batman show. It was in reruns, I'll admit. And the 66 Spider-Man cartoon, and, you know, those and Speed Racer and Ultraman and stuff, that was my formative years. And I went to school one day, and it was like, I think it was first grade maybe, and some kid brought his older brother's comic books to show and tell, and one of them was Spider-Man, I think it was 100. It was even 99 or 100, 101, so one of the, but it's the one where Spider-Man grew the two extra arms on each side, so he actually had eight limbs. He fought Morbius, the living vampire. And I was just like, wow, this is so cool. They made a comic book out of the cartoon. Because, you know, I hadn't seen any of that before. I didn't realize it was the other way around. But from then on, I was drawing Spider-Man, and I was drawing Batman. And somewhere along the line, people made the mistake of saying, oh, that looks good. And so I kept doing it, and I never quit. And, you know, I'm always doodling Spider-Man and Batman, occasionally a little RoboCop, you know, big RoboCop fan. It's probably my favorite movie. And
gotta love RoboCop. The RoboCop.
So I don't know, I used to sit around and draw characters and make up my own characters and their costumes and names and powers and all this stuff, and I had giant stacks of all these characters I created, and I was like, you know, someday I'm going to be Stan Lee and I'll put out these comics of all these characters, you know. And I enjoyed characters, I enjoyed drawing them, but I didn't like drawing backgrounds, and I don't know, I didn't spend enough time doing the work, you know, the work that I would have needed to really make it as a full-time comic book professional, you know. I just drew for fun. Mm-hmm. And so eventually some friends of mine and I decided to try to start our own comic company, but we were like three pencilers, no writers, no inkers, no colorists, you know, so that didn't go too well. Then I decided, I was like, well, I need to do something on my own. And a good friend of mine said, well, you've got all these characters, you need to come up with stories for them. You know, they're, instead of just drawing, oh, well, this is a person and that's their name and that's their powers, you need stories and stuff. So I had designed Ace of Diamonds. I was very happy with her look and her powers. And so I was thinking about her, and I came up with a really cool origin story for her. And good thing I had that, because I was shopping around looking to find an inker. I thought, if I could find a really good inker, he could, like, bring my pencils to life and, you know, really polish my stuff and make it look good. And I found a guy who was an inker, but when I went to try to recruit him, he said, hey, I'm starting my own comic company, and I'm looking for writers. So I was like, well, I can write? I had never written a thing in my life. I was like, I can write, because I wasn't going to let opportunity pass me by. So I sat down right there. This was at a convention. I sat down and came up with a one-page plot for a story, and I walked back and handed it to him. He said, all right, go home and write it. And that was history. We ended up making the Ace of Diamonds. She was a backup story, just a little eight-page backup story in her first two appearances, and then she got her own title. So it was, like, really awesome to think that I've got my character I created who's got her own book, you know. So that was quite an experience, a, you know, dream come true to have my own character. It wasn't, you know, it's not like I was doing Spider-Man for Marvel or something. That'd be a dream come true as well. But I was talking to a Spider-Man artist at one of the shows, and he told me, he's like, man, I'd love to have my own book with my own character. You know, I was jealous of him because he was drawing Spider-Man. He was jealous of me because I had my own book. I was like, well, that puts things in perspective. That was really cool. So Ace of Diamonds, showgirl turned superhero. And, you know, it sounds a little cheesy when I put it that way, but it had all the things I liked in it. I mean, it has ninjas and cyborgs and psychic powers and spies and secret organizations and all sorts of people with powers and aliens and everything in it. And I used it as a springboard. I tried to introduce as many of my characters in there as I could so that I could create my own universe. So that's really cool. I introduced, not only was there Ace of Diamonds, I introduced Bloodlust, who's a vampire who works as a secret agent. And I introduced Silver Spider, who, it's funny, she's a lot like the new Spider-Man comic that's just been relaunched, because she's kind of a cross between Spider-Man and Iron Man.
Sure.
So, and that's kind of what they did with the new Spider-Man title that's been out for the last, I guess, 3 months now. Or 3 issues, at least. And
because Stark actually built him a suit, right?
I'm not sure. I don't think that's what's going on with this one. I don't know. I haven't read it yet. I think that the new take on Spider-Man is he's older and he's used his science to be successful. So now he's the rich, jet-setting, Stark-type character himself, but I think it's his own science. I could be wrong. I haven't read it, but I do know that that's the twist on it is he didn't just make the web shooters. He's made all sorts of other advances, and he's now rich and famous and whatever. So, but that's kind of what my character was. She was kind of like a female version that was, you know, she can stick to walls and shoot webs, and she's got this synthetic spider weave costume that makes her bulletproof and has high-tech gadgets and stuff like that. So, you know, that was my concept with Silver Spider. And
Yeah,
I introduced a lot of cool characters. It was a lot of fun. And luckily I was able to get my – now, that was as a writer. That was my first experience, really, as a writer. And I wanted to have a hand in the artwork as well, and I was able to convince the publisher to let me color the covers for my comics. And he was apparently happy enough with that he had me color some covers for some of his other comics, which is really neat because they did a miniseries called Pantheon. And Pantheon is from Bill Willingham, who is the author of Fables. So it was really neat to meet Bill Willingham at a show and say, hey, I colored some covers for your comic books. Yeah. So he's a fan favorite. Writer for comics. So that's pretty cool.
Very cool.
So that's a little bit of my comic book background.
Well, you just got props from the chat room, Robin Blankenship, a very talented speculative fiction editor, is praising your artwork. So, yeah, definitely. I'm curious, are you interested at all in returning to the comic book world at some point? Or
I really am. I keep toying with it. I think first off, I'm going to brush up some of my coloring skills and dust them off a little, you know, and maybe get out there and try to color a couple pinups or covers or something just to get my hand back in it again. And then I have some plans to maybe revive my Ace of Diamonds universe, possibly in prose. And we'll see how that goes. And then maybe down the road, if I'm not too busy, I might try to get them back into the comics again. Comics are, you know, different market than they were, you know, around 2000 when I was putting my book out. So it's interesting. Of course, now there's digital. That's a big thing as well. So I don't know. It's a nice thing about digital. I'm a collector, so it's hard for me to think of wanting to buy my comics digital. I mean, I want to collect them, you know. But on the other hand, as a publisher, it's available for sale forever. It's not like it's in print and then it's out of print. I mean, you make it, and people might just not discover it for years, but then it's still available to go pick up. You know, so
right. That's
pretty appealing. So, yeah, I would definitely like to get back to comic books some. I'm just so busy, writing the Darkness Unbound series at the moment. And actually, I'm going to announce here for the first time that I think instead of having to wait so long for the third book in the series, I'm going to start doing some short stories as well. So I hope to get a short story out before book three comes out. And hopefully without delaying book three any. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Very cool.
Well done. Yeah, we have a breaking scoop here on the Star Chamber show. All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
I've got a working title. Working title is Circle of Death instead of Circle of Life. You know, you've got Circle of Death. So just a little teaser.
That's a very kind of kung fu sound to it.
Yeah.
Or a title for a My Dying Bride album. One of the two. Yeah, it's a very depressing doom metal band that I know that my good friend Eric Dude just absolutely loves. But yeah, I always get a little bummed when I listen to them. But anyway, I digress. Wanted to touch base with you real briefly, getting into some of your broadcast and visual stuff, because I have had the privilege of getting to see you in your garb for the Crow and Pinhead and some of your cool cosplay stuff. So in the area of fan films, you have a couple that, like with Indiana Jones and Dick Tracy Meets the Green Hornet, and talk a little bit about touch on some of your fan film stuff, and then maybe go into your screenplay work.
Yeah, it's funny. I can't imagine kids nowadays with access to HD cameras and computer editing and all the great cosplay costumes that are out there and YouTube and digital ways to get things out there, you know. Some friends and I in college, actually I think it started my cousin and I decided to make a home movie, at kind of like a version of Brave and the Bold, the DC Batman team-up title. And I'm a crazy Batman fan, and I bought one of the, at the time, $300 full Batman, Michael Keaton, 1989 Batman suits. And
nice.
It was pretty cool. My cousin made a Punisher costume, and we were going to do a Batman-Punisher crossover. And we're going to have the Penguin and Catwoman, and Microchip was in it from the Punisher, and we were going to do all this. It was going to be awesome. And we shot a few days on it here and there, but it never really went anywhere. But still, it was a lot of fun, a learning experience. And I almost went off the ledge at one of the buildings at IUS where I was going to school at the time. I was in my Batman costume, and I went to stand up on the ledge for a pose and stepped on my cape. And when I stood up, it almost pitched me off the roof.
Oh, no.
So the danger
is
low-budget film.
You know, what she was saying in The Incredibles, the cape, you know.
The cape, that's right. I would have just spread my wings and hope I could glide, like Moon Knight or something, you know. So so that was a lot of fun, but a friend of mine, I was showing it to him, and he was inspired, and he had a friend with a video camera who went, and him and his family got together and made like a little Indiana Jones movie, just a little like 20-minute or so movie called Indiana Jones and I think it was The Quest for the Silver Spoon. And it was a funny little thing, but he did an amazing job with it. And I saw that, and I was like, blown away. I was like really inspired, and I was like, we need to work together on a big project. And
right.
And he ran with it, and he made this crazy mashup that is Indiana Jones, Batman, and Robin, two Ghostbusters, and the Klingons from Hell, as we called them. So the bad guys are the Klingons, and they've been stranded on Earth. and Indiana Jones ends up working with Batman and Robin and Doctor Who. And this was while Doctor Who was on its hiatus before it came back and everybody was in love with it. And it was just a lot of fun. We spent way too much time, devoted like our whole summer to this thing, and made like a over 2 hour epic movie that is just insane. And unfortunately, I wanted to be Batman. Remember, I've got this Batman costume. I'm Batman, right? You know? But nope. My friend Chris, everybody in his family is like 6'5 or something, you know? And I'm like 5'9 with my hair teased up, you know? So I couldn't really be Batman, not even with the ears. It didn't work. So I got to play Robin in that film. So that's why I have such a cool Robin costume. I really went out of my way to recreate the 66 Robin costume, and I was very happy the way it turned out. So I got to run around in tights and play Robin. And I was going to be – the Robin wasn't in very many scenes. I wanted to be cameraman, but they convinced me that I needed to also be Doctor Who. So
nice.
I also played Doctor Who in the movie. So that's pretty neat. So all my friends, we joke around that I'm the Eighth Doctor, you know.
So you are an actor too. Awesome.
Yeah. I did some acting, and it was a lot of fun. And then I was like, that was just a great experience. And then we decided to do another one. And I am a big Pulp fan. And at the time, Dick Tracy had come out with Warren Beatty and Madonna. And I came up with this idea. All the Dick Tracy things are like Dick Tracy meets Cue Ball or Dick Tracy meets whatever, you know. So I came up with Dick Tracy meets the Green Hornet because I was a big Green Hornet fan. So I made a Green Hornet costume, and I cast myself as Green Hornet, of course. And my friend Scott was Dick Tracy, and we made another big, long, two-hour epic Dick Tracy-Green Hornet crossover. And I was going to write it, but my friend Chris, who had written the other one, said, man, you got so many plot threads and so many things. I was going to have cameos with Doc Savage and The Shadow and all sorts of stuff, and he was just like, it's getting so big and so out of control. So I let him take it over, and he came up with a really cool story, and it was a lot of fun to do, and it was great playing the Green Hornet. I've always still loved that. And I've been talking to Ken over at the Nerdy Planet, and we're talking about having a screening of my home movies over there. So
awesome.
These they're not available on YouTube or anything because of copyrighted music and stuff like that. I do have a trailer up. If you search Dick Tracy Meets the Green Hornet, I did put a trailer for that one up, and it is on my YouTube channel. But we're going to hopefully have, and I'll try to announce it when I can, we're hopefully going to have a screening of each of those movies. And it'd be too much for any normal human to watch both of them in one night, so hopefully we'll have them on two different nights. So
with Ken Daniels, the man that makes dreams come true. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That was actually the question in the chat room is from Robin, is where can we see the movie? And she might, I also will add that you should be proud because she says that Robin is better anyway. So you actually got the better character.
Well,
so,
yeah. He's not biased, but no.
No. Yeah, Robin says Robin is better anyway. So, but yeah, that was the question in the chat room. You answered it. So, yeah, so hopefully, yeah, Louisville will have an epic screening with Ken Davis.
Yeah, I can't wait. It should be a lot of fun.
No, that would be awesome. And, yeah, let's before we run out of time, I want to also make sure that we get to talk about you as one of your legion of talents, podcasting and your podcast, because that's got quite a track record.
Yeah, I can't believe I've been podcasting like 10 years now. It's like, where's the time go? I can't believe it. Was like, what's a podcast? And now I've been doing it 10 years, you know? it's Pod Culture. That's at podculture.com. And I basically say it's like a bunch of geeky friends just sitting on the couch catching up. We do have some structure. We have some recurring things like geek cuisine, where we'll try funky candies and weird tasting, you know, Jones sodas and stuff like that. And then I do a segment occasionally called Guilty Pleasures, because I love old B-movies, and I especially like to try to find weird foreign B-movies and things, and tell people about how zany they are so they can try to track these obscure gems down themselves. So, yeah, Pod Culture, a lot of fun. Been around 10 years. If you're looking for something to fill your time while you're, you know, jogging or whatever, there's 10 years
have
worth
you,
of it out there.
Well, make sure you tell Michael West when you get the Japanese horror movies on. Yeah, make sure you tell Michael West.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
have you done
a
review of Have you done a review of Deadly Eyes yet?
No, I have not. Deadly Eyes.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. We promoted Deadly Eyes more than I think even the movie company did.
it's a version of the a novel by what is the author's name?
The Rats is off the Rats.
The Rats, the novel The Rats.
Oh. Okay.
British author. I'm having so many problems with
names.
James Herbert.
James Herbert. Okay.
Yeah, but James Herbert's novel The Rats, they made a movie of it in the 80s called Deadly Eyes, and the rats, when they weren't hand puppets, they were basset hounds in rats.
Yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah, okay. Who was in that? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't even remember who the stars were. I mean, at one point they're chasing after the legion of rats is chasing after this guy, and they chase him down these stairs. And when they were filming the scene, the director had to keep calling cut because they kept barking.
That's great.
Well, as a guy that grew up with two basset hounds in my years, I can uniquely appreciate the basset hound as a breed. But yes, Statman Crothers has actually made an appearance in that film. He was a cool maintenance guy that had a very dour fate in the movie. But
really,
yeah.
Well, he was great in The Shining. So
yeah,
was he the same character? Maybe they're linked. It's all one story. Yeah.
I wasn't he a maintenance person in Hong Kong Phooey too?
Well, yes, he was. Well, he was the janitor, but yeah, Hong Kong Phooey. Awesome.
I see
Hong
a theme.
Kong Phooey. I'm wearing a Mighty Mouse shirt right now, actually.
Oh, Mighty Mouse, yes.
Big fan of Underdog as well.
Oh, yes.
Very nice.
All the classics.
Not bird, nor plane, nor even frog.
Well, as we're coming up on the end of the show here, Glenn, I want to make sure you get time to shout out all your contacts. So, you know, let us know how to find you online and
all
whatnot.
Right. I am on Twitter at Glenn Porzig, GlennPorzig. You can find out about my books at darknessunbound.com or at graphicentertainment.com, because I'm crazy and want to maintain a ton of websites. My comic book work can actually be found on megababe.com. Wow, right? And let's see. Yeah, that's it, basically. I mean, you can look me up. My YouTube is G Porzig, and it's got the trailer for Dick Tracy Meets the Green Hornet on. And I don't know. And, of course, I've got an Amazon page and a Facebook author page, and, you know, just do a search for my name, and I'm sure you can find me and see what crazy stuff I'm up to. And of course, podculture.com for the podcast.
Very cool. Well, thank you for coming on the show, Glenn. We loved having you. And next week we have Margie Cole, Karen Coyne Press on December the 2nd with Sayla and Alex. But thank you, Glenn, and really enjoyed having you.
Hey, it's been a great time. I love chatting with you guys. So anytime, just let me know.
Awesome.
All right.
Good
luck for the show, and I'm sure I'll be listening to future episodes.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, and have a good night, everyone. We have come to the end.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Be seeing you.